Welcome to the Aussie Villains podcast. Paul, your host, joined by Tess, Spud and Rhino. We're going to look back at a great win against Tottenham, a bit of bad news about El Amani coming up, and also we look forward to the massive, massive, massive game against Liverpool. This is the Aussie Villains podcast. We used to be Up the Villa, the Aussie Villains podcast, but let's just go Aussie Villains. Because you know what? Why not? And as always, up the Villa.
Well, they're in a promising position. Ramsey. Here come Aston Villa. And it is a goal scoring chance. Jacob Ramsey lands an early blow on Tottenham in the race for European football. Villa did move it more quickly. Leon Billy, the one change key in the build-up. Moreno. Porro tracking him, but that's a fizz ball in. That was a glorious ball from Moreno. And Watkins, so close to getting on the end of it. Hands on head all right. No foul given on Skip, and that may turn this into a Villa attack. It's Buendia. Well, Aston Villa getting closer and closer to that second goal.
Hit the woodwork again.
Buendia. Still Buendia. And Foster had to take action. It's still alive. Oh, out of nothing. Tottenham are in. Harry Kane. And usually he doesn't miss, but he has. Extraordinary.
This would have been the second one, and you're expecting a goal there from Harry Kane and Tottenham Hotspur. You'd almost put your house on it.
Douglas Luiz right the wall. Luiz doubles Aston Villa's lead. They are on the European charge as Spurs away woes continue.
So let's rock in.
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Aussie Villains podcast. I'm Paul. I'm joined by my co-hosts Rhino and Spud. How are we, boys?
Very good. How are you?
Look, I'm talking to you boys. We're talking Villa. How can you not be good? I think the Broncos are getting beaten in rugby league up in Queensland. That makes it even better for me. So sorry to any villains who follow the Broncos, but it's always good news. And boys, one of you guys, it could have been me because I run the Twitter account, someone put up a poll about, you know, who's your favourite host on the show. Now, anyone who would do that kind of thing, they're an absolute narcissist, I think. It's all me, me, me. So we put it up there. It was an actual mic tape. So I won't go into the percentages there, but the whole point of putting it up was actually to take a bit of a laugh. So, boys, if anyone's taking that too seriously, yeah, it was a little bit of fun. But we all know it would have been me anyway. Okay.
Like asking someone who their favourite child is.
We actually had a couple of people comment, like, basically they felt guilty about voting. Yeah. Everyone does a great job. Someone put the Welsh fella there. I love that.
That was probably my mother, to be honest, fellas.
I love it. Smithy 1874 put up, that's like asking who is your favourite character from Friends. Love that. And then Paddy Villa Paddy put up, where is all the above option?
Which, brilliant.
You know, Twitter only gives four options. So come on, Elon, get the fifth in there. And we'll all be happy. But no, that was a little bit of fun. Guys, I was absolutely stoked with that first half against Spurs. I just thought, we could have put four or five away at one stage. It was just so much fun to watch. I'm not sure how you guys felt about that first half.
Go for it, Spud.
What I'd like to say about this game is, and I think it's just It was brilliant in a way, like, because like we done the review or the preview last week, like, and you're kind of asking for scores or whatever. And I remember I said to Paul, I says, look, I'm not even optimistic about this game. Like, I'm confident we're going to win this game. Like, because sometimes you just look at styles of teams and stuff. And I've seen a lot of Spurs since Ryan Mason took them over. And I just looked at them and I've seen maybe good full 90 minutes of the three or four of their games under Ryan Mason. And I was thinking, they do not match up well against us. Like I said, they have too many spaces around the pitch. Like, it's exactly what we're good at exploiting. Like, and I just couldn't see anything but a Villa win. I said at the end of it, I said, I can see a controlled win. Just, I thought it was everything we're going to. And main reason that I thought this, lads, and I'm not trying to like blow Aston Villa's trumpet here or whatever, but Unai Emery and Ryan Mason is a complete mismatch. You're talking about a man who's won four European Cups. You know, he's with average teams. He knows how to set up a team up. He knows how to get the best out of him. Ryan Mason, look, he's obviously there to help the club or whatever, but he is not on Unai Emery's level. Like, Unai Emery set the team up with the high line and he did not know how to change it. It happened for 90 minutes. And his only tactic after training all week, the only tactic he could come up with was basically play Harry Kane in midfield to try and drop the ball over the top. That's playing your main striker. Like, we all know that Kane likes to drop deep and collect the ball, but he wasn't dropping deep. He was playing nearly midfield there for the first half. It was ridiculous. Like you look at a proper coach like Erik ten Hag, say, the week before against Man United, and we were catching him offside. But he made changes in-game to stop that happening. Yeah. And they started having runners from deep. And there wasn't one move for the 90 minutes to try and combat that. The only thing they did, and that was more to have more of a direct runner. So I don't think that was ever a threat for us to lose that game under Ryan Mason. That's no disrespect to him, but he's just not at that level of a coach. Like.
And I really loved also... off my line player. I still am not the biggest fan. He's teased this again, Bailey, but his goal that he set up, where he actually tricked his defender and went onto his right foot, which I thought was really good. I think the defender played him to the left, and he didn't just play on his right. He played it into the most perfect position you could ever. I mean, we probably would have scored that goal. Or maybe one of the three of us.
Well, he's just teasing us again, isn't he? We always joke about Bailey that, you know, he has these flashes, just keeps us on the hook, and then has, you know, a bit of a cold patch, but then does something like that. But yeah, brilliant vision from him to sort of pick Ramsey out. And I just watched the goal again, and Ramsey sort of sets him off on the right hand side there, and the run from Ramsey. And the effort to get in the box, and just to beat his man. I think it was Skip or Højbjerg who was tracking him in there. And just to beat them to the front post and finish is just, he's coming on leaps and bounds, Jacob Ramsey. And that's, you know, that's one of his strengths, isn't it? Getting into the box and his finishing.
It was brave from Ramsey as well, because if you remember when Watkins touched the ball and Romero took him out, what Ramsey was bearing down and going with the ball, he actually had John McGinn next to him in acres of space, and he took the more difficult pass to Bailey, which I thought was quite, like, it's quite easy for him to roll that ball to McGinn, but he's seen the space in behind the fullbacks, so he actually took the harder pass by passing it to Bailey, and it just opened everything up. So I think you could have passed that to McGinn. McGinn probably would have had to shoot because Bailey would have closed down. So by him playing that pass quickly into that area on the right hand side, like, it just opened everything up, and it was great. Well, it actually reminded me very much of a goal that we scored against Bournemouth a while back that Dougie Louise finished, where Bailey came back for Louise after Ramsey running with the ball. It was actually Alex Moreno started the whole thing. It was great. He won the ball back and then he gave it to Ramsey, and then Ramsey continued his run the whole way. But Watkins' little touch there when he got fouled was just brilliant. Like, it just opened everything up. Brilliant team goal.
I was just going to say, I think the whole probably first 60 or 70 minutes of the game, that just the passing has been so much fun to watch. I feel like we're repeating the same things every week at the moment, but it's just so much fun to watch us play at the moment. It's glorious.
And the midfield battle for me is where it was won for us. Like, McGinn and Louise. McGinn, it was probably his best game in a Villa shirt for me. in a long, long time, if ever, probably one of his best. And him and Luiz just controlled the game and just ran over Skip and Højbjerg and just dominated. McGinn, just the strength on the ball and just the control and the poise in possession was just a joy to watch. And, you know, we saw him use his ass to sort of keep Harry Kane at bay and drop him in the dirt and just, you know, and get away. And just a brilliant performance from both of those guys. And then seeing Kamara come on again and then pushing McGinn further forward, it just shores everything up. And like Spud was saying, just an Emery masterclass, really, wasn't it?
Ah, definitely was. And in the second half, when they did make the changes, they did come back into the game, which we thought they might. What did you think of the last few minutes? Did you think we were going to hold on? Were you nervous?
It kind of felt to me like this could be typical Villa, like, again, that we absolutely played off the park. But this team have a bit more about them, like, that injury time, man, they played it perfectly. Like, they didn't just retreat into the box and invite the pressure on, man. They kept the ball. Even when they didn't have the ball, man, they kept them in Spurs from stopping any balls coming into the box and stuff. And I think we're really learning how to manage games, like, and I think that's probably the biggest thing, the biggest difference of us under Emery. Like, there's no panic now. They're learning that. They're learning how to control the game even when they're under pressure. Like, they were allowing Spurs to have the ball, but they were cutting off all the passes and stuff. And I thought it was really good. Look, I thought Spurs might sneak an equaliser. It would have brought my heart out, because it would have been completely undeserved.
Yeah, and as Villa fans, how many times have we been burnt in the past, boys, and a late goal and just had our hearts broken? But for me, the save Emi Martinez pulled off from Kane at 1-0 up, I think it was not long after the second half started, was just crucial. It was just a brilliant save. He stood him up and sort of just went the right way. And, you know, Kane usually buries those. And if that's 1-1, you know, at 50 minutes, then, you know, Spurs would probably have second win and start coming at us. But he is the best in the world at the moment. He's just world-class save. And not involved. Spurs didn't have a shot on target in the first half, so he's had nothing to do. And then to be, you know, on his toes and to pull off a save like that, just magnificent.
Exactly right. Guys, the other thing I think that was so exciting was the crowd once again really were into the game, which is something that we've noticed this season, that as the season's progressed, they've got more and more back to the Villa that we've yearned for so long. I don't know if you noticed that, but I just thought the crowd was just amazing.
Well, we said before, it goes hand in hand, doesn't it? Like, you know, chicken and egg. Like, the players have to perform to get the crowd going. The crowd have to perform to get the players going. But just sometimes it's just working, and it's a lot easier for everything to work when you're getting results. It must have been it's hard watch getting up, like, and watching the game sometimes. Mm-hmm. Previous regime, but so imagine going to the games like every week. Like, look, I mean, you're still lucky to get to go to the games, but that was some dire football being played. So I think you can get away with a lot if you're winning games, you know, and they've been given the time to build now. Because remember, at the start, all the moans and groans when we were playing out of the back, because we just didn't trust the players like enough. But it's just everything is going in the right place. Like, it's a very positive club to be sporting at the moment, you know.
Well, let's get into a negative. So we beat Tottenham. That was fantastic. We've had the news in the past 24 hours that Alemany is not going to be coming. He's staying at Barcelona. The club actually never announced that he was coming. It was announced by reporters. He has basically said himself that he was certainly looking at being at Villa. And to me, it is a huge loss. I just think the experience and the plays he would have brought, I'm really disappointed, to be honest, that he's not coming now as our football director.
Yeah, the last minute U-turn, you know, it was getting reported in, you know, big sort of media circles, and, you know, and people sort of breaking the news on Twitter were quite reliable sources. So you think it's done, but it's that old adage, isn't it, that, you know, you don't... until they're holding that shirt or the scarf at Bodymore Heath, this never done. And yeah, I'm the same as you, Paul. I was really excited when the news was breaking, and getting someone of Alemany's, you know, caliber and the clubs he's worked at and the potential, you know, of him working with Emery was really exciting. So I actually wasn't across this until you boys were texting today. And yeah, and then I was just sort of, a bit gutted seeing all the news breaking over Twitter.
Yeah, Spud.
Yeah, look, I think, like, from the news reports today, it's pretty definite he's not coming now, you know. But again, as you said yourself there, Paul, Villa never said he was coming. Barcelona did announce he was leaving, all right, but they never, like, Villa never announced he was signing for us. They asked Emery about it, and he said it was possible, but he never confirmed it was going to happen. So something's after breaking down along the way. You're seeing a lot of people making links that going, oh, you know, he was only doing it to get the structure he wanted in place at Barcelona. I don't know if that's true. Just sometimes these things.
No. Whether the stuff I'm reading is true or not as well, certainly he would have consulted with his family, and people have made some jokes about living in Spain or living in Birmingham. But the family, and I'm really happy for him that he's made a decision potentially that his family's really happy with. So, you know, if he came to Villa and his family wasn't happy, you know, you put him in place, he's there for a year, he starts things, but then he hasn't finished his project. So we may be better off never of having him there, if that makes any kind of gold on something that's actually smells like poo.
Yeah, look, I mean, the offer may as well be there. The offer was definitely there, but that's not to say he ever accepted it. He's obviously just giving it some thought, and possibly some news reporter got it and then jumped all over it. You know how things take off once one story is told. So maybe he was just considering the offer with no promises, and maybe that's what Emery meant by it's possible. Maybe we'll get him, maybe we won't. I've no bad blood towards him. Like, he's allowed to make his own decisions. It's very different if he came out and said he was going, but he didn't, you know. So
no.
Barcelona's a big club. It's hard to walk away. Who's to say Barcelona haven't offered him a massive package to stay, either, you know? And
yeah,
you just don't know. Look, Villa aren't Barcelona. And as much as, like, us as fans of Villa like to think that, you know, like, what Villa means to us on the world scheme, like, Barcelona are ahead of us. Like, there's no point in denying that. Like, and if Barcelona can offer him a package he was happy with, maybe he was unhappy with the package he was being offered, or the transfer kiddie, who knows? But whatever has happened, there's no point dwelling on it. Just move on.
No.
Yeah.
If we could go back to the Tottenham game a little bit later on, I want to talk about that last that goal near the end, because it did change our goal difference. We would have both been on +5, and obviously they've scored more goals, so that's one of the criteria there as well. Yeah. But it's going to be all to play for in the last two games. There's a cliche number 7 in the podcast so far. but what we might do, boys, is we might get into some questions before we go and look at a huge game against Liverpool. We've got questions from various sources. We might start with Twitter. And Spud, every week I miss one on Facebook, so might get you to give me a hand in case I miss that one as well, because we love our Facebook people just as much. So let's have a look. And one of our first questions here, and this relates exactly to what we're just talking about. Jay Rose, so Jay Roe Villa writes, we've all heard about the project in place by NSWE for the next 5 years, but based on the progress made with Unai this season, what realistic goals should be set for the future? I might start on this one and let you guys start in a couple others.
Yep.
I think there is no doubt the next 5 years we should be aiming not for Europe, we should be aiming for Champions League. And if we're not aiming for Champions League, then I'm a little bit worried about what we're trying to do. I'm talking about aims, and that's what he's saying here. What realistic goals should be set? I think we should be setting the Champions League. So we know City's going to be there. Arsenal, Manchester United, Liverpool, Villa, Newcastle, they're all going to be fighting for those Champions League spaces. And it could come down to Newcastle and Man City holding two spots and everyone else fighting for them. But we should be aiming for not just Europe, but we're talking 5 years. We should be aiming for Champions League.
100%. That's the goal, isn't it? And that's where every club, you know, in our position needs to be aiming for. You know, we've got Unai Emery in charge now. There's stuff going on behind the scenes at the club that we were just talking about. And I think that's what it's all gearing up to, is getting into those Champions League spots. And, you know, we know how lucrative those Champions League places are. And I think as a club, you know, now's the time to sort of strike. We've seen Chelsea have dipped. They're going to come back strong at some point. You know, Tottenham are sort of a floundering at the moment. Newcastle will obviously strike as well. So, yes, it has to be the goal, doesn't it, Champions League? And why not now? Why not go for it?
Over to you, Spud.
It's hard to knock the owners. The moment they took over at the end of 2008, and they said it's a 5-year plan to get to Europe, and they're like, even after a bumpy couple of years here and there and a few mishaps, like, you know, they're right on the cusp of it. Like, it's very nearly done, the 5-year plan. Even if we get into the conference, that's still getting into Europe 5 years, you know.
Yep.
So they're obviously going to have the next step in plan. I would imagine as a club, once you've done that, got to Europe once, their next step for next year will be, let's be regulars in that top 6-7, you know. Like, I mean, Christian Purz always refers to being the best of the rest, you know. So I don't think in Emery's head, though, he's going to want Champions League. He's going to see a pathway to the Champions League, whether that be by winning the Europa League, which we know he can do, and that gets you into the Champions League. It's going to be consolidating. The next step of the programme is surely going to be consolidating the top six and being more competitive in the Cups. I believe that if we get into a Europa League or the conference, Unai Emery will absolutely believe he can win it. And that, again, parachutes you up to the next level of European competition. If you win the conference, yeah, up to the Europa League, from the Europa League or the Champions League. If we make the Europa League, I'm telling you now, I'm going to be putting $100 on them to win it, because, and I mean this, there's not a manager in the world I would rather, Pep Guardiola, anyone, for the Europa League than Unai Emery. His record in it is absolutely unbelievable. And would you bet against him doing it in with Villa, if he can do it with Villarreal?
Well, that sounds like a quote from one of our former gaffers, mate.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, bet against that famous Villa. I wouldn't bet against them, honestly. I think if we get into the Europa League, I wouldn't put it past as winning it. And that's not optimism. Unai Emery he knows what it takes to navigate it. So I would say, yeah, Champions League regulars. The league is probably out of a bit of a stretch at 5 years. I think, obviously, fighting for the league, you never know. Look, but Champions League.
This really ties into, if we can combine it, because sometimes you answer a question and we partially answer a question. This actually ties to another question. And that this one is from, I'm just going to get the order here because a couple are out of order. So, yeah, this is from Paul Albert, Holtender 02. With the inevitable acquisition by Manchester United by multi-billionaires, do we ever feel that Aston Villa could ever expect to win their premiership, or is it going to become like the Scottish premiership? I'll leave it with you two to start with, and I'll come in.
Yeah, it's a really tough feat, isn't it, winning the Premier League. You know, Leicester, with the anomaly a few years back, winning it, you know, as an unfavoured team. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of investment now in Premier League teams, and it's becoming, that gap has obviously become bigger and bigger between the top six, or the rich six, whatever you want to call them, and the rest. But then you've got the likes of Newcastle, Villa sort of trailing in there and coming through. But look, if you'd have asked me a couple of years ago, would Villa ever you know, get close to winning the Premier League, it would have been not a chance in my lifetime. But, you know, with the way this season's panned out, and with the way the owners and the club is structuring, it's looking really positive. And, you know, it's not going to happen overnight, obviously, but we're definitely moving in that right direction. But yeah, it's such a tough league to break. Such a tough league.
Well, we're in the top six of owners. It's their money, right? So it's not about how many people go to the games, but we're in the top five or six clubs in the competition in terms of owners who are billionaires, right? Mm-hmm. But this is the difference. So many of the owners that are about, the, you know, from third spot onwards are worth about, you know, $8 to $12 billion, which is a lot of money.
Yep.
Let's not, you know, go on about that. Manchester City's owners are worth about $22 billion, but there's a lot of stuff behind that as well. I just want to put this into some perspective of why I'm so we are not going to keep up with Newcastle for the next, you know, 50 years of our life. Newcastle's owners are worth $320 billion. When you put that in perspective, what Man City's done with an owner who's got $22 billion, Newcastle are worth $320 billion. Make no mistake, money talks, everything else walks. Newcastle are going to be doing a Man City in the next few years. Financial fair play or not, 153 charges or more are currently swept under the carpet against Man City. In the end, as much as we want to be football romantics, money's going to talk big time in the next few decades.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose, but look, As part of Ryan, I said, like, you look back over the years and like, and just what we've been through in the last years, like, and to even be mentioned, is it possible to win a league? But the way the owners are going, like, I mean, I think, why not have the ambition of winning a league? So what's the point in doing all this if we don't think we're ever going to have the possibility? Like, but again, as you said, Paul, it all comes down to investment. And look, Newcastle, obviously the money they have is just absolutely ridiculous. But I think Chelsea have shown that you, like, that's the biggest window ever. Like, it takes more than money sometimes. It depends on what moves Newcastle make. Man City, we always say, has put a big structure around all their money. So for me, and this is it, like, this is my... I have absolutely no substance to this argument, but this is just my opinion. If Newcastle make the Champions League, I think they're going to absolutely blow the bank for Harry Kane in the summer. I think that's what I see happening. Because if they're looking at Man City and you're thinking, how are we going to close this gap with Haaland, and they get into the Champions League, who else would you look for 3 years? Harry Kane scored them 90 goals in 3 years. I would imagine Eddie Howe would say to them, here, look, There's your money. He doesn't want to go to Spain because he wants to beat Alan Shearer's record. Like, the man wants to score goals. Like, if they go away and they sign Harry Kane and they put a few signings in around them, then I think they can start to challenge a bit. Are Newcastle that far ahead of Villa? I think with a bit of smart investment, we can. I think that, and I think if Man City win the treble, I wouldn't be surprised if Pep steps down, to be honest.
A good example of this, though, fellas, is, you know, I know Liverpool have spent money, but they've managed to grab a title, you know, without spending as much as the Man Cities and everyone else. And so it's not out of the realms of possibility. But like you say, Spud, you've got to have that, you know, you've got, at the end of the day, you've got to have it right on the football pitch, and you've got to get it right off it as well, then, avenue. And, you know, Liverpool setup has been really good there under Klopp, and obviously had a bit of a down year this year, but they've generally been really consistent and in the title race in the last few years. So yeah, it's a tough one, but yeah, like you say, you've got to be aiming for it. Why be in the league otherwise?
I just don't get why we're considered, like, when we talk about finances and everything like that, we've got a stadium that's going to expand. We don't owe money. We're performing well. The higher we keep performing, and our owners have got a ton of money. And so in the near future, we're going to be able to spend a fair bit of money. I've read some other things saying that we're in big trouble in terms of what we've invested, but I think that's crap. Because I've read through the last few years of Villa's papers and financial records. We're in the clear. I don't get where some of this is coming from.
Yeah. And you look at Arsenal. Like, Arsenal haven't been in the Champions League since 2016, and they ran Man City pretty close this year. Like, so what's not to say if we got us or Newcastle got Champions League for a couple of seasons? And, like, you need to be in the Champions League anyway. Like, I know Leicester, that was just a one-off, right? But to be attracting those players. But you don't know what kind of a drop-down, if Pep did walk away from Man City, it could take them a while to get back up to those heights. Like,
I think there's just too much money there. I think they'll be around the mark, mate. I'm not saying that they will be the dominant force they are now, but I can't see the drop being that quick.
I just think that it's not completely impossible that in the next decade we could challenge for a title if the owners stay invested like they are. I would imagine that is their aim. You know, they're winners in life. You don't get to where they got there by wanting to come second. Look what Wes Edens did with the Milwaukee Bucks, Paul. You'll know more about that than I will. And he's obviously a winner. They're winners. They're multi-billionaires.
I suppose the difference there, Spud, and in the American sport, yes, there's a ton of money there. They do have salary caps, which financial fair play tries to impose in a way, but they also have the draft system. So, you can potentially pick up a Giannis. You can potentially pick up a LeBron, a Kobe, those kind of players.
Boubacar Kamara.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, we're not getting him at 21, 22, are we?
23.
Yeah. See?
I just think sometimes you can box clever too, as Pop, like Rhino's example, Liverpool is a brilliant example. Yes, they've spent money, but they made pockets of money out of Philip Coutinho and all them, and they just spent it well. When Spurs sold Gareth Bale, they didn't reinvest that money well enough. Like, well, they could have. So I like to believe that we could.
Do
I think it's likely? No, but I don't think it's impossible.
No, I think we all do. Mm. And that's the eternal flame of optimism that shines in every football fan. And unfortunately, Leicester have kept that shining light going.
I will say one thing, though, Paul, before we move on to the next question. And this is something that I might get hammered for, but I actually hope Newcastle don't make the top four this year. And I think Newcastle and Liverpool might catch them. And my reason for that is because it's going to be bad news for everybody once Newcastle get Champions League. I'd love to see them break that monopoly, right? But we're going to be in a similar market to Newcastle, right, for this summer. And there's only a certain amount of top players come available each transfer window. There's even less of them that want to sign outside of London or Manchester with the big names and clubs. So we're going to be battling Newcastle for similar style players. If they can offer Champions League, like, that's going to put us on the back foot.
Yeah, 100%. I do absolutely concur with that. I suppose the other part of Paul's question, and it's a great question. Brilliant. Could you expect can we expect to win a premiership? We've addressed that. Or is it going to become like the Scottish Premiership? Well, I do believe it is going to become not quite like the Scottish Premiership, but in terms of challenging for the title, I think we could be going down a similar path. Not exactly, because there's so many competitive teams, but we really could see a Newcastle and a City take it away for a number of years. And I hear your points of view, but there is a fear there with the amount of money. $320 billion as owners. They only have to put $100 million in a bank at 5%, you know, and they're getting $5 billion without doing anything a year. I mean, that's scary.
Chelsea have ridiculous funding, and no Man United are going to have ridiculous funding. So that's four.
Not like Newcastle, though, guys. No club in the world has the funding Newcastle has now.
No, I know. But the only thing is, like, if financial fair play was a real thing, which it's not, obviously, Man United should technically be in a stronger position than any of them because they're a commercial juggernaut, like what they generate themselves.
So, go to any shop, Spud, any shopping centre in Australia, and if you were bored enough and counted how many kids are wearing Manchester United shirts still. Yeah. You compare that to City shirts. You'll occasionally see a City shirt, but that's going to be a decade away before we see those shirts flooding, and we may not see it ever.
I remember seeing the commercial manager of Real Madrid, and he was saying like that, you know, when David Beckham was at Man United and they signed David Beckham for 25 million, which is big money at the time. They said that they automatically booked their pre-season tour for Asia because United and Beckham were so big over in the Far East at the time, and they spent 25 million on him, and they said the 3-week tour of Asia, they made 8 million back straight away off Beckham alone.
Well, before this podcast started, we were talking about trading cards and the NBA and the draft and everything, and the draft can change a team like you wouldn't believe. It is something that, and in the NFL, a quarterback potentially can change you because you only pay them $3 or $4 million for 4 years. There's a cap on what you can play drafted players, and so they try at the moment. The money ball thing is get a really good young quarterback in, and until you have to pay him, because then you can put all good pieces around him. So that's the money ball thing there. The money ball thing in basketball is the same. If you can get a top 4 or 5 player, and so that's the one thing that holds football back to an extent.
And I think that's where Villa, with Johan Langer being there, is kind of where they've tried to push the club a bit behind the scenes, is that, you know, statistical analysis of, you know, player recruitment. And, you know, and we have seen some good players come through the door. You know, you look at the likes of, you know, like we were just saying, Boubacar Kamara on a free transfer, Douglas Luiz came in, you know, he's still only, he was 24, you know, he's got a high ceiling. Look, John McGinn, £2.5 million. That's, you know.
I know.
An unbelievable snip. So, you know,
Martinez, 15.
Yeah, brilliant example. You know, so we have sort of got a bit of that money ball sort of analysis going on, I think, at the moment, which is good, you know.
And with Unai, it's going to be even more, because if you go through the history of his teams, he's always been a money ball manager.
So, yeah. And he's always made players, or he's found these players who have sort of been at decent clubs and sort of reinvigorated them or reinvented them in different positions, and, you know, and just got them playing. And similar to what he's done to Villa already, really, isn't he? He sort of reinvigorated some of our guys, you know, like Mings and McGinn. So, yeah, he's the right man to be, in charge of the club for where we are now, for sure.
Well, Rhino and Spud, you've got me excited here, guys, because you've got me back believing and, with the cynical money.
We can do it, mate. Roar with the pride, mate. Roar with the pride.
Oh, mate, you know, I'll always be a villain, but it's the money ball's just been getting, not the money ball, the amount of money.
It is deflating when you see teams like Man City being able to spend 60 or 70 million on a player, and if it doesn't work, it's grand. They'll just go out and spend another 60 or 70 million. Like, we just can't do that. Like, like you see when they bought Danilo, spent 60 million on him right back, it didn't work, so they just went and bought Cancelo for 60 million instead. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, you know, we're not.
Yeah. Let's get on to a positive that you guys spoke about earlier before we started. Now, Chris Heck, we've been signed as our president of business operations, which is a very American term as well, in remembering our ownership. So he was a graduate of Villanova University, which is a really strict, prestigious uni, but it's also a very prestigious basketball uni. So basically makes no surprise that he was the senior vice president of marketing partnerships for USA Basketball, so for the NBA. Did that for 7 years. And in that time, he built the relationships with places like the Philippines, where basketball's number one, China, South America, Europe, and it absolutely did an amazing job in that period of time and saw it flourish just as LeBron was really coming into the league. So he was very lucky in that regard. Picked up by the New York Red Bulls, and at that period of time that the Bulls were heavily investing in it. He put something really good together there, but had an amazing opportunity then to go across to the Philadelphia 76ers. And people might say, well, he was only at New York Red Bulls for 2 years, but he's actually from that area. So, you know, he's like a Philly kind of background. So he started off as a chief sales and marketing officer, you know, which doesn't sound that prestigious, but in the NBA it is. And he became the president of the 76ers in a really vital stage for them. And that was in the stage where they were basically the process. And he put into place and helped put into place the process, which helped get him this year's MVP, Joel Embiid. Obviously, it failed with a certain young Australian there, which we won't talk about too much. And really, they bombed out of the finals this year when they had... they had it on toast to get into the conference finals. They were 3-2 up and double figure lead in game six. So he has got an absolute plethora, and he's been a winner everywhere he's gone in terms of what he's done to those franchises and clubs. And to have him as a president of business operations at Villa, I think it's a massive coup. Give a positive after a negative.
Yeah, and no, I'm excited by it. And like you said, I'm not across American sports as much as what you are, Paul, but you obviously read a few articles today and after the announcement. And, you know, it's exciting to see the clubs trying to grow both aspects, you know, on the field and off the field, and trying to gear up with the right people. And, you know, we've come a long way in a short space of time. And seeing these people being appointed shows that the owners are, you know, have got these ambitions and are looking to put people in the right places to put a network around, you know, Emery and the team and do what's best for Villa. And, you know, you look at the successful clubs that we've just been talking about, and they've all sort of got these models where they, you know, their structure is quite deep and quite wide. And I think that's the way to go. Now, football is a business at the end of the day, and you need someone looking after that and your best interests.
So I just wanted to give a little bit of a background there, because a few people are coming out and saying, oh, his background's this and that, but his background is exactly what we need. Huge experience, massive contacts in the US, and we're doing a US tour. Coincidentally, obviously, as well, a big American tour. So we came out with a negative, and we've come out with a positive. So, you know, Alemany, as we said, was never actually signed on paper. He wasn't, you know, holding a Villa jersey. He wasn't announced at Villa Park. So it's not like that happened and he retreated. It just would have been a nice for us. But it comes back to what Spud and yourself said, Ryan. We're putting the pieces in place, because that's still a massive pickup for us. So I'm really happy. I still think we will go out and look at a really good football director over the next few years from somewhere else. Not the end of the game. Yeah. Did you know about him beforehand?
Alemany? Yeah, I'd read a lot about him.
I had. But a lot of people... you talk to every, you know, if you went to every Villa fan, they would, there'd be most of, look, let's be honest, a lot of us wouldn't have known that much about him.
No, I didn't, truth be told. I didn't know a lot about Alemanni, but yeah, like you say, same with Chris Heck, to be honest with you. I'm sort of, yeah.
I don't know anything about Chris Heck. No, I'd be lying if I said I didn't know. I have followed a bit of his career just because of the job he'd done at Barcelona and when he was the president of Mallorca and stuff.
Well, you guys know how much I'm into America, or you're starting to really learn how much I'm into American sports. So he was in, you know, podcasts every week for a number of years, people talking about the process in Philly and everything like that as well. So, his name's well and truly known.
I would say it's a positive signing, like?
It is a really positive signing. There is a little bit of infamy with his name, though, because of the process. The process has kind of been frowned upon because it's basically tanking. So hopefully it comes out. We can't tank because we get relegated. We'll go from there. So there's a few other little questions here as well. So we'll keep going before we review the massive game coming up against Liverpool as well. So just have a look at these. What else have we got there? Oh, now, this one comes from someone we might know. Who's Danielle Baxter? Danny Baxter 01. Who is this?
That's my better half, that is, fellas.
I know who she is. She's the one that was lying on the pole saying that Rhino was her favorite.
Oh, yeah.
I know, Danielle. Tell the truth.
Come on. Now, really good question from your better half. How do we stop Trent Alexander-Arnold on the weekend, given how well he's been playing?
Fantastic question, this. I've seen this question earlier. I didn't have much time to look through the questions, but this question stuck out to me, and I thought that is a fantastic question because just brilliant.
Have you seen his stats at the moment, fellas? Someone was showing me the other day that he's number one in, you know, progressive passing, chance created, because he's obviously shifted into the midfield for Liverpool, and his stats are through the roof. And he's just, yeah, he's a massive threat. So I honestly, you go first, bud.
Oh, it's very hard to it's really hard to know what to do with him because like without kind of doing our review as well, I suppose. But I don't know. It's you have to give up something in our own team to look after him, you know.
Yeah, agreed.
But I think that's okay at Anfield anyway because I think we're going to have to do that anyway. If you get me. So he's definitely a threat, and I like what Klopp has done with him because I listened to his interview on Sky Sports when they were interviewing him and Williams after the Curtis Jones, the two Scouts lads after the Leicester game because they demolished Leicester. Curtis Jones got two great goals and Trent Alexander got that absolute belter from the free kick. You're talking about his stats, yeah, they're through the roof, man. So they were talking about it after his interview, and Jamie Carragher was basically saying like that, well, they've taken that defensive responsibility away from him now, just let him concentrate on going forward. And he's shining, man. He's seeing more of the ball. Like, his range of passing is absolutely frightening.
And
it's obviously, we'll get into it after, but it's something that we're going to have to watch with the high line because Mo Salah is so good at checking his runs. So it's going to be something that's going to be so dangerous for us. But how do I think we stop him? For me, if it was me, I'd be dropping Kamara in on him. John McGinn is great, does a great job, but John McGinn likes to buzz around. We're going to need someone that's going to sit on his toes, and I think Kamara is the man for that. And if Kamara can't make it, I'd stick Dendonker in there, to be honest. But Kamara for me, if fit and ready, stick him on there. Just let his job be Trent, just like he did with James Ward-Prowse that time. Obviously, I know it's a different level. It's a step up, but I believe Kamara can step up. You know, I think that's the only realistic chance I can see.
That was my. I had a two pronged kind of. You're more the tactician I am, but my two pronged kind of thought here was exactly what you had: is that Kamara steps into that space as well, because I've watched. What he's been doing. Yes, he's been going more into the midfield, but he has been coming from the defence still. He hasn't just been in the midfield. He has still been deep at times.
You're dead right, Paul. Yeah, 100%. He still definitely has a responsibility to drop back. It's just not keeping that line and stuff.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And so what I noticed is they're giving him the same kind of space that teams give Mings and Konsa. And Konsa won't take that space so much. And Mings occasionally will take it on. And I really love when he does that. He'll come up the field and then he'll, you know, pass it through. In the past, he would have just passed it backwards nonstop. And I think here is where Marino can also, and he did it on the weekend, if he continues the running he's doing, Trent Alexander-Arnold, if he makes any mistakes at all, especially with Kamara there and then Marino doing the overlaps, I think he's going to have to be more accountable. And I think we need to step up into the space, because I watched that game and Leicester were horrendous. They should have lost that 8 or 9 nil. Half their players didn't even try, right?
They were decent for the first 20 minutes, but once that ball from Alisson cut them over the top, their heads dropped, man.
100%. From there, it just looked, it was horrible to watch. But I think that I do agree. Let's take his space. Let's force him to do those passes. And as good as Salah is at checking his runs, and he is, he's lost that yard or two of pace. And that was even obvious against Leicester. The goals he would have scored a year or two ago, he couldn't just get past that defender. So I just think we take his space.
Yeah,
sounds simple. But don't let him run up the field and put the ball through. Step in. And I don't think McGinn is the right person either. I could see an early yellow card with a heavy tackle. I think
we'll get into the review after, but I can see another role for McGinn in this game.
Yeah.
Well, what do you reckon, Rhino? What do you think you can do with Trent? Because it's tricky, isn't it? Because you kind of have to be willing to let Kamara get out of his place as well, because because he does still drop back in as the fullback. And you're going to have to be brave. And if he's on him, he has to be on him for 90 minutes. He can't just, because that's how he hurts teams. Like teams hold up with him in the middle, but then when he drops the fullback, they leave him off. I think they're going to have to be willing to let Kamara follow him into those spaces, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's where you sort of touched on it. I think, you know, for me, Kamara comes back in and, you know, we'll run through the teams a bit later on, but like McGinn will probably push a bit further up out wide again. And I see, you know, a bit of doubling up. I see Kamara and McGinn both sort of jamming in tight and taking up that space. And it's going to have to be a really disciplined performance, isn't it, from us to stop Liverpool, you know, at home. And they're in great form, and especially Trent Alexander-Arnold at the minute. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see if he gets on the ball, someone's right on him, whether that's Kamara or McGinn. Yeah, but you've just got to... like you say, sacrifice one of yours to not take him out physically, but to nullify him, I guess. But yeah, difficult, very difficult to stop.
Brilliant question, though.
Yes, and a good voter as well there. So
I'll take all the votes I can get.
Now, also, Spud, you said, I'm just going to check there's no more Twitter questions, because we are a little bit pushed for time here at the moment, and it's probably all my fault for being a bit too verbose. Let's have a look. Here we go. Yep. So we've got two more here. No, Tez had already answered that. So Tez at AVC, you said, well, we lost out on getting our money from Barcelona, who changed his mind when he went to Birmingham. won't say anything there. Smithy, 1874, in response to Cuban Knight's question, define a club legend. And this was about, is Mings a club legend or not? Also, what's everyone's goal of the season? I find this one hard. I'll let you guys do that. I didn't mind Luis's on the weekend. That was a beautiful free kick. A club legend. Mings is not a club legend.
No. He's heading in the right direction. And, you know, we talk about club legends. And I think we've touched on this before. Like, you know, the guys who've won the European Cup in 82, et cetera, you know, they go down in folklore. And for me, classed as club legends. When you win stuff at clubs, you know, that goes a long way to cementing your place in the history. Mings is definitely on the right path. You know, the promotion, the way he handles himself at the club, and the way he's come back from the adversity. If he can get a trophy and a few trophies on the board under Emery, for me, he'll be going down as a legend. And, you know, just when we're talking about Mings and positives, the video in the week from the club with him and the little girl Lucy was just unbelievable, you know, and stuff like that. It just makes you proud to be a villain, doesn't it? And just Tyrone Mings is just an absolute credit to this club. And yeah, I'm just so thankful that we've he's turned it around, and the way he's performing now, and, you know, unbelievable.
Yeah, well, club legend to me as well says that anyone outside your club would think that that guy's a club legend. I mean, that's, I know that sounds silly, but I think it goes beyond just your club. I think, you know, if you went, who's a club legend of Newcastle? I think you'd be really hard pushed for people not to think Alan Shearer is a club legend. And I think that's the point where I go club legend.
That's a very good point, Paul. Actually, what other supporters see from the outside in as well is an important thing.
When Tess put up this poll, like I said, he's both, he's a legend and an ambassador. That's just more because I was feeling so happy about him with the video he had done. But as a club legend, yeah, you've touched off it. I think you need to win something. But club ambassador, 100%. He's the kind of guy you want representing your shirt, isn't he?
100%. Now, Spud, I've missed out on some questions from Facebook, mate. Do you have any of those ones available?
Are we going to do Smithy's goal of the season before we...
I'm going to stay out of this one because I've got four or five in mind, and I haven't got Tess's alarm bell here, and we're missing Tess on the pod.
Really not. Do you want to go first, mate? Have you got one in mind?
Yeah, I'm actually going the same as Smithy, and great questions again. Smithy always chucks in some good questions for us week on week, and we really appreciate it. But for me, it's a little bit biased because I was at the game earlier in the season. So Coutinho versus Arsenal for me, just the build up from the back, Kamara, and then, just into Coutinho and that finish. And just being there for that goal was just really special for me. I haven't been at Villa Park for 4 or 5 years, so to be back there and to witness that was just special for me. So I'm going the same as Smithy.
Brilliant. For me, my goal of the season that I voted for was for Bailey's goal against Leeds, because that was the best counter attack I've seen Villa play since probably scored that goal when Martinez threw the ball to Grealish and Grealish travelled and gave it to Watkins. That goal we scored, if I even remember the goal, it was bouncing around, it was from Leeds' corner, and Ashley Young got the ball, and instead of just hoofing it, he just
played
pass and found Kamara's run, and then Kamara just travelled probably 50 or 60 yards, and again, the shot opened up for him, and I think, who was the left back? An easier pass onto the left of him, but he took the option to Bailey. Bailey cut inside and just rifled in the top corner, and I think it had been like just, I don't know, it was only 5 or 6 seconds from our box to their net. Like, it was just that for me. So Bailey's goal against Leeds.
Brilliant, brilliant pick.
Yeah, and I'm not going to go into it, guys. So I just think I've just thoroughly enjoyed the season. So there's my cop-out for you. I love the goals you guys have chosen. Having a quick look on our Facebook page.
Yeah, so last week we had a question that we missed. And it was from Richard Murphy, who's always a good listener and contributor to the podcast as well. So he said, just for fun, the new Premier League Hall of Famers were announced recently. Mm-hmm. What former Villa players from the Premier League era do you think you should receive the honour? I know Spud will 100% pick Paul McGrath, as would I. So he needs to pick someone else.
I like that. Well, for me, Hall of Fame, the first one who springs to my head is Dwight York. And I know he's sort of his career in the Premier League probably, you know, obviously went to United and won a lot of things. But for me, Dwight York is standing out as my initial pick, to be honest with you. Probably a little bit premature because he finished up, you know, he was flying at Villa, and you know, we all know the story, went to United and obviously did really well there. But yeah, probably Dwight York for me.
There you go, Paul.
I was really thinking about this one, and I can't have Dwight York. And I originally did, but I think he'd be the only one I think fits the criteria. I just can't have it because of him going to United. I don't think anyone else fits the bill. Because the question was Premier League era. And if anyone puts down Gabby Abonglahor, he might be in the Hall of Fame for eating pies with me.
My pick would be Gareth Barry.
Good choice. Very good choice.
The Premier League all-time appearance records is up there. I don't
one
know
of my favourite players of all time.
He's won the Premier League at Man City. He was solid. He's the one player like that no one begrudged his move from Villa because he gave us absolutely everything and he deserved his time to move on. You know, it just we weren't in a position to hold on to a man of that talent, but he gave us everything. He gave everything to the Premier League, though. Like, never injured, never missed games. Was always a solid 7 or 8, whether he played with us, Man City, West Brom, Everton. His performance never dropped. So, Premier League Hall of Famer. And I do think he'll actually be in it eventually.
Yeah, I do too. An absolute role model as well, wasn't he? Just the way he went about his business, just kept his head down. Wasn't blessed with bloody pace or physical attributes, but just had that, you know, that nous, that great footballing ability, and just a good brain, footballing brain.
He was good at a bit of everything. Like, he was not spectacular at anything, but he was good at everything, if you get what I'm saying. Like, you know?
Well, guys, if you had to put a gun to my head, and I'll be a hypocrite here, if you had to, I'd have to put in Mark Bosnich.
Fair enough.
Being a hypocrite based on Dwight York leaving, because Bosnich did the same.
But
for me to be Bos.
Yeah, and there was other questions in the Facebook polls from this week. Do you want to read them out or do you want me to do it?
Yeah, it might get you too, mate, only because I'm having a few troubles going in between a few different things.
Yeah, perfect, mate. So, where are we? Yeah, okay, so here we go. So this week we have Josh Donachy, always a good contributor and listener.
Thanks, Josh. And we want some of your food, Josh.
100%. Top Chef. Check him out on Facebook and Instagram if you're in Australia and Brisbane. And yeah, get onto his socials.
So Josh has more of a statement than a question, but I'm sure we'll cover it in his question in the review more so. So I don't understand why Matthew Aleman has done a U-turn. But having said that, I see us sneaking a win against Liverpool this weekend.
We'll come to that in a moment because I do too.
Yeah, perfect. We'll answer that in the review, Josh. But thanks again. Keep those questions coming to Facebook.
Brilliant.
100%.
Any others there, mate? Or is
that that's what we had from the Facebook this week because we're late sending them out.
Well, let's get in there. We're taking on Liverpool at Anfield. We are fighting for a European spot. We've kind of touched on the tactic that we think will be there for Trent Alexander-Arnold. They have a number of other threats, obviously, as well. So, boys, how do we want to do this today? Do we want to do it lineups, or do we just want to get into a little bit of a discussion of the game and then finish off the pod?
I reckon let's go the lineups first. Let's see what we think and then build on the tactics from there and, you know, how we're going to play and then the result after, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, boys, take it away with the back four or five.
Same back five for me as has been, you know, consistent the last few weeks. So Young will continue at right back and, the rest the same.
Midfield, boys. Unless you disagree there, Spud, sorry.
No, it's back five for me, unless Olsen's trained better than Martinez this week, but something tells me maybe not. I do see a change in midfield, sorry. I see Kamara coming in there, and I see John McGinn shifting right for twofold, because I think that's John McGinn will help with the threat of Salah, will be able to help out the left-back with Salah too, which will still allow... our fullbacks to get forward a bit more. Sorry, help Ashley Young out with Salah, depending which side he plays on. So I think John McGinn will play on the right, Jacob Ramsey on the left, and Luis and Kamara in the middle.
And Bailey on the bench.
I've gone same as Spad in the midfield with Kamara coming in, but I'm dropping Buendia for Kamara to come in, and I'm going Watkins and Bailey up top then. Just because
that's not a bad
I wouldn't call. Be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked if that happened either. Part. I don't think it is, but I'm going to think Buendia, just a bit of creative spark up there. But because there could be a real stretch game, a lot of balls over the top from us, I think Bailey could play. Yeah,
that's where I think that where Bailey will come into it is the pace and just stretching teams. And look, we've been up and down with him.
You've talked me into it, and especially with Buendia's attitude the last few weeks. Let's put him on the bench. Bailey stays on. I can't believe I'm saying that. And Kamara in. I like that.
I would say, though, is maybe that Buendia is that bit more disciplined, structure discipline than not necessarily mentally disciplined, but structurally disciplined in a system. So it might very well be a case of Buendia starts, plays the 60 minutes to keep us in the game because he will battle up there. And then you bring Bailey on to stretch at the end if we're still in the game, possibly.
I like both ways, but I also like Buendia coming on if we've played well enough and we've either got a lead or we've either got a lead or we're still close in the game. Wouldn't mind seeing a little bit of Buendia with fresh legs. We haven't seen that in a fair while.
Yeah, and I just think Liverpool defensively this season haven't been right. And I think Watkins and Bailey together up there will cause them all sorts of trouble. And it's a big if Bailey is on, then we know what he can do. And
I just want to touch on your point. They've only conceded two less goals than us. So that's a really good pick up there.
Yeah, I've just watched a bit of Liverpool, just highlights and stuff. And I think, obviously they've had a few injuries with Konate being out for a bit, but defensively they've been quite frail this year compared to other seasons. And, if we look at the way their fullbacks get forward as well, there is, if you've got, the likes of Bailey and Watkins, who've got a bit of pace and strength about them, well, more Watkins has got the strength rather than Bailey, but, if we can isolate the centre-backs and get Bailey running at them, I think we can get some success there.
Yeah.
Well, once you finish there, I've got the vision of the goal for you too.
What you're saying about the defence there, Ryan, and you're absolutely spot on. They were leaking goals, but I will think, as Klopp does, because he is a high-level coach, he since the Spurs game, he has spotted that being a major problem, and they've kept three clean sheets in a row, and he has tightened them up. They are, and I think moving Trent Alexander into the midfield is a part of that, because teams were trying to expose Trent when he was going forward, like as a fullback.
So yeah,
they were 1-0 against Fulham, 1-0 against Brentford, and 3-0 against Leicester. So they're obviously after making a few tactical switches defensively. Not 100% sure what they're after doing there. How they're doing that, but maybe it's just come down to they're playing three teams that aren't really lethal in front of goal. I don't know, but when you see three clean sheets in a row, it typically means that they've made a change, made an adjustment. So
one thing you've got to be though against these top teams is clinical, and Liverpool are still leaking chances. Leicester had their fair share. It's key against any of the top six, isn't it? When you get those chances, you might only get one or two. You've got to bury them. So we've got to be on.
Can't be missing headers like he did last week. Like he just.
Yeah, you've got to. You've got to take.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah. I don't revel in other teams having injuries, right? But Nunes, who would have caused us issues, and no matter if he's not scoring, he's very doubtful to play. Firmino's not playing. So there is a couple of players that would definitely worry us that aren't going to be playing this weekend. So I'm feeling pretty confident about this one, to be honest, guys. I know that sounds so stupid, but we are one of the teams that actually matches up pretty well against Liverpool.
Yeah. Boys, I'm going to ask you a quick question. Because I've been trying to figure it out in my own head all week, and it's hard to know, because I think it's risky. Do you think we'll play a high line again, a really high line against them? There's a difference between Villa's high line and Villa's really high line. Like, we're really high against Spurs.
No.
We're really high against United.
No. I don't think we will, because of what you said earlier. I think Salah, he doesn't have the pace that he had not long ago.
He's
so clever.
Yeah.
I think we'd be in all sorts if we play the Villa high line.
And if you remember, fellas, when we played them at Villa Park, and you're right, Paul, Nunes had a field day and should have scored a bag full on that day, because they were
a threat, wasn't he? But he just couldn't finish. Yeah,
huge threat all day, all game, and his pace and running in behind really caught us out. So I think Emery will probably look at that and think, all right, this is one of those teams that's got the weapons to really punish us if we play too high. So I think he might adjust. And yeah, because that game, if Nunes is out, I'll be happy. But they've still got threats. Like you say, Salah's beautiful at bending the runs and getting in behind. So yeah, probably Jota's a bit deeper.
As well, and Diego Jota's class. Like,
yeah.
I don't think we're going to start this game, guys, quickly. I think it might be a game that we do settle into for a lot longer than we have previously. I see a goal coming for us late. That's just my vision of the game. I think we're not going to see the open play that we've seen in the past. There's too much to play for. Emery's not a one-trick pony. I think we're going to try and hold him for as long as we can, frustrate him, and then really hit him on a break.
I think you see, like, well, as Rhino said, like, they do give up chances, like, because I'll give Klopp one thing, man. He never lacks being brave. Like, he knows now that it's either shit or bust for the Champions League for them. They have to win these two games to give them any chance. And Klopp is the kind of manager that will go for it. Like, he'll die in his arse trying to win those two games, which will lead basically. Like, Klopp's not going to go out there and try and sneak a goal. Like, he'll come out that.
He can't afford to. Either at home, and they've got Newcastle and Man U ahead of them. They cannot afford to sit back. They're in some run though.
Liverpool, like they're great teams. And typically when they get into these kind of rotations, they're really hard to beat. Like they are.
But isn't it funny, because I think there is a player in that squad who everyone was talking being one of the great defenders of all time. I think Virgil van Dijk is as for the great footballer he is and was. He's the one I think is going to be suspect at the moment. He just looks like he's carrying something, or he just doesn't have that mobility that he had.
Ollie Watkins has always got some joy against him as well. Every time he played him, he's just one of those players that just doesn't match up well for him. Ollie Watkins is like, he's always got joy against him. So
I think Watkins, Marino and Bailey running at him, I think Van Dijk, he could be the weak link. He'd be the guy I'd be targeting at the moment.
I do fear if Salah starts to isolate Mourinho a bit on the... And I do think
it's going to take the team effort, mate. It's going to take Mings.
100%.
Mings is going to have to come across and really support him. Konsa's going to have to cover Mings's man. It's going to have to be what Villa really has become. It's going to have to be that really tight unit. And I am sure in training they were absolutely planning that for that kind of seller role. I mean, that's how they're the kind of points of difference that Unai gives us.
And the other thing as well is like that I've watched a fair bit of Liverpool lately, and man, he's only getting better. We knew he would, but he's getting better quicker than I thought he would. A bit of a slow start, but Cody Gakpo is really starting to roll. He's after mastering that chopping deep role now instead of Firmino, and his ball control is class.
I do have his rookie card. It's a 1 of 10 signed, so I'll be holding on to that one.
Yeah, he's. We knew he was going to be a good player. I thought it might take him a bit longer to adjust to the Premier League, but he only came in January. But since Liverpool started winning games, he has been really involved.
Well, guys, tell me. I need to know. I think we know how the game potentially is going to be played. What are your scores? Spud, fire away.
Yeah, to be a party pooper, lads. Lose this game 2-1.
You're an honest man.
Yeah, I do. I just think when Liverpool have so much to play for and to get going. Yep. I hope I'm wrong, but no, I think we're going to lose this 2-1, unfortunately.
Over to you. Look, I appreciate, I know you're an optimist, so that says a lot. Over to you, Rhino.
I've got a frenetic 2-2, fellas. I think it's going to be... up and down, and just both teams just going for it. We've still got a lot to play for. They've got a lot to play for, and I think it's a good matchup. It's a good yardstick for us to see where we're at as well. You know, you want to play these top teams. You know, we've just knocked Tottenham off. Let's see what we can do. But I think 2-2. We've had some good days at Anfield in the past. So I'm just hoping it's one of them.
Well, if it goes my way, it's going to be squeaky bum time. you're going to wash your own underwear, Pete, please, guys, to keep your relationships going. They're going to have 30-odd shots on goal. We're going to have 11. And it's going to be Sergio van Dijk, own goal. Bailey's taking him on. He slips. A crappy pass from Bailey, by the way. We've got a free Watkins by himself. But Bailey tries it on his right. It skews. Van Dijk slides in. And off his hip, in for the goal, and we win 1-0. We're up. That's in the 79-minute mark, boys. So we are literally backs to the wall. We do not know how we keep it out. We've got it coming off Martinez's thigh. It's come off his shoulder. Konsa and Mings headbutt the ball out. Like, they hit each other. They go for the ball, and they both hit each other. They're down for a few minutes. There's 9 minutes of added time. There's a penalty shout in the last minute of the 9 for them, and it is a foul, but VAR says it's outside the box. They skew it over the top. We win 1-0. Europe's looking good.
I hope you're right, Paul. I hope you're right. And I'd gladly be wrong on this one. If you know, I think we will score. I think, like as Rhino said, like Liverpool will give us chances, and I do think we will score. But yeah, I don't know. I just also, well, forgot to mention as well. Right before this podcast started, they announced that Unai Emery has been nominated for the manager of the season.
Yes,
considering he only came in at the start of November, that is absolutely incredible.
Five or six other people there, isn't there? There's obviously
six. There's six usually, I think. Yeah. I haven't actually seen the list, to be honest. But
I saw the list, but I haven't got it in front of me. I know that definitely Pep is there, Ted is there, Newcastle's manager's there.
Hey, yeah. Did Thomas Frank get in there?
I didn't think so. I mean, I haven't got it in front of me. But
what about Gary O'Neill at Bournemouth? Did he have any idea?
No, I don't think so either. I'm just trying to remember the six. I haven't got them in front, guys.
I didn't see the list either on myself, yeah.
But look, for me, it comes down to winning in the end. I don't think, depending on your circumstances, this is an argument for a different podcast, isn't it, really? Because is someone who comes in and revitalizes a team and gets them from the bottom, like Emery, up into, you know, sixth or seventh, that's a managerial effort of the year. But is it winning potentially the FA Cup, the Champions League, and the Premier League? It'd be, you know, it doesn't matter what money he's got. That'd be pretty bloody hard to beat, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. The manager of the season nominations are Arteta, yep. Roberto De Zerbi, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mikel Arteta, Roberto De Zerbi, Unai Emery, Pep Guardiola, Eddie Howe, and Marco Silva.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. But, I mean, look, it, once again, it comes down to context, doesn't it? If a manager's brought someone up from the bottom, or a manager's exceeded expectations, as Howe has at Newcastle, you could raise an argument for any of them.
For me, if Newcastle make it, I do think, take the money aside, because they haven't spent that much. No. I do think Howe deserves it, because when he took them over, they were rock bottom. Like, he's done a serious job, but he has come in November. De Zerbi has done a great job, but he took over a team that was actually doing well at the time. So, Pep's untold riches. Arteta's done well. But now for me, it'd be Eddie Howe if he gets Champions League.
Yeah, Newcastle's, I mean, forget the amount of goals compared to Man City, because Man City are next level. But Newcastle have conceded the same amount of goals as City.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely outstanding.
Could you see Harry Kane going to Newcastle?
I think he's more likely to be at Man United, to be honest with you. I've just got a feeling United are going to try and bust the bank to get him with what they've got up front at the moment. And where they're looking to go. And I think there's going to be some investment in United coming up. And I think they'll look to upgrade Weghorst. And I think they'll go for Kane. I think they really will.
I think they took Weghorst just as a stopgap to keep the funds to throw everything at Kane.
Yeah, possibly. And I think, you know, they're looking for that type of striker, obviously, who's a different option. I think United will cycle through some of their players through the summer. You'll see the, you know, maybe Anthony Martial, you know, Weghorst will obviously leave. And I think United are going to go all out for Kane. Whether he goes there or not, I don't know what other offers will come in for him. But I'm with you, but I think he'll stay, or he'll want to stay in the Premier League.
Yeah. I agree with you guys. I think they're both good options. I think he's more likely to go to United. United's actually, you know, basically said that all season that they're keen on Kane. I really could see him and he won't, but I could definitely see him in Italy. I just think he'd be perfect at this age with what he can do. I think he'd be superb at it.
I just think being the England captain and so close to Shearer's record.
Yeah, he won't leave.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking of the fit. I think he'd be fantastic in that. But with Rashford there, he'd be a perfect foil. Rashford gives that.
Yeah.
I just think if Newcastle got to the Champions League with the money they have, like they look, as I said earlier, they look at Man City and you think, how do you close that gap with Haaland? And Kane's probably the only one that could guarantee you those goals every season for next year. Isn't it?
I'm not sure at the moment that they have the same kind of support. I agree with you. If they come out with if they're making the Champions League and they come out with the right bid, then I think Newcastle is the right team to go for. But if you're talking about the supporting staff around him and ready to rock and roll on day one, I still think United's the better choice. But money talks, doesn't it? And
Did you see, with Chelsea being the way they've been, would you reckon they'd be a chance to go in for him? Would he ever go there being, obviously...
He's not going to play Champions. He's not going to be... I mean, he's guaranteed if he goes to United or Newcastle. He's not guaranteed, but he's virtually going to take Champions League at the end of his career.
Yeah, I just think there might be a few teams sniffing around him. But, do you think he'd ever go that sort of way to Chelsea or nah?
With Pochettino.
It's the Champions League. I think if you're this...
It's probably the Champions League at this stage. I think Newcastle and Man United. He's not going to go to Man City. That chance is gone for him.
They don't need him at Man City. Let's be 100%.
They tried mad to sign him before Haaland, but Levy wanted too much money. But they probably knew Haaland was coming at that stage anyway, so they didn't push the boat out. So I think United and Newcastle are probably on his realistic options.
Really see him in the red. I don't know why. I just see him in
the red. Maybe he'll sign for Liverpool.
Who knows? But, boys, any final thoughts before we go? Because we have got a pretty long podcast tonight.
Yeah, I'd just like to say congratulations to our buddy Tess.
Tess,
for our listeners, I won't go into deep because it's not my story, but Tess done a job interview last week and there was a lot of candidates, and he found out today that he got the job, so we're absolutely thrilled for him. So well done, Tess.
He stumped us. He stumped us tonight, but congrats, Tess. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing news.
Anything else, boys?
Just like you say, just touched off on the Tyrone Mings video through the week. I thought that was just sensational. The missus had a tear in the eye watching that one. So, just unbelievable. But for me, I guess just touching on some of our players, and past players. For me, I'm really happy to see Jack Grealish now finding his feet at Man City and doing what we know he can do, because he took a lot of criticism, a lot of flack early in his, Man City career, and to see him now flourishing against the best teams. And against the best teams in the world at the biggest stage. When he moved to Man City, I couldn't begrudge him that move I know some people do, but for me, I'm just really happy to see where he's got to and where we knew he could get to. So, very happy.
And I just want to touch on the support bases of Coventry and Luton, who will be going to Wembley to get into the Premier League. Two amazing clubs, one club that was literally gone with points deductions, with financial issues, were on death's door to an extent in Luton. And Coventry, with such a storied history and a history against us as well.
Coventry were in League Two in 2018 as well.
Absolutely. So for people, obviously many, many people wanted to see Middlesbrough Sunderland, and it would have been a great final as well. People are saying it's not a blockbuster, but the stories behind this, if you're a storyteller, the stories behind either Luton or Coventry coming back in the Premier League, it just gives me such old school match or shoot kind of magazine kind of feeling.
Yeah. And I was reading earlier, one of the players at Luton, if Luton make the Premier League, he'll be the first ever player to go from non-league to Premier League with the same club. Is... What a story that is. I forget the guy's name. I was just reading it before we come on, but what a story that would be.
Yeah, and this is what I'm saying. If you read into the background of clubs and different things like that, this is actually a really good story. So we've been there, those supporter groups, the nerves they're going to have on that day. Oh, I still remember us coming back up. So good luck to either the Hatters or Coventry there. And this has been the Aussie Villains podcast. I hope we've given you some listening pleasure tonight, guys.
Up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Guys, that was... Thanks for joining us for another Aussie Villains podcast. It was Paul, Rhino, Spud and Tess. Don't forget to give us a rating if you can on Apple or Spotify, anywhere else you listen to your podcast. And also, why not join our Twitter group at Aussie Villains, capital A, capital V, and get us on Australian Fans of Villa on Facebook and Twitter as well. This is Aussie Villains Podcast. As always, up the Villa.